Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th Canto, Chapter 24, Text Number 27. So it's sort of prose Sanskrit, so I'll just read the English translation. Sukadeva Goswami continued, "My dear King, how shall I glorify the character of Bali Maharaj, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Master of the Three Worlds, who is the most compassionate to his own devotee, stands with club in hand at Bali Maharaj's door. When Ravana, the powerful demon, came to gain victory over Bali Maharaj, Vamanadeva kicked him a distance of 80,000 miles with his big toe. I shall explain the character and activities of Bali Maharaj later in the 8th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam." So there's no purport. Does anybody know anything about when Vamanadeva kicked Ravana 80,000 miles? That'd be interesting to hear something more about. Oh, yeah? What do you know about that? Sutala, yeah?
Of course, he took him, he led him inside, and he went and Bali Maharaj received him properly, everything. And then he said, "Here, I have something to show you." So he took him to this place, and then there were like two huge, like really huge mountains of like pearls and gold and all these, you know, jewels. And he says, "Those were actually the earrings of Hiranyakashipu." And he said, "That person whose wife you kidnapped, he's the one that killed Hiranyakashipu." So he just showed him, and then, you know, Ravana was like frightened for a little bit, and then, you know, immediately he clouded again, and, you know, he left. But that was when he was conquering the universe.
Hmm. Where is that from? Is that some Purana or something like that?
Yeah. Hidden. Okay. It's like stories in the Ramayan, but then there is the stories in the Puranas that complement the Ramayans.
Okay. Interesting. Okay, so next verse, number 28. "Beneath the planet known as Sutala is another planet called Talatala, which is ruled by the Danava demon named Maya. Maya is known as the Acharya, master of all Mayavis, who can invoke the powers of sorcery. For the benefit of the three worlds, Lord Shiva, who is known as Tripurari, once set fire to the three kingdoms of Maya, but later, being pleased with him, he returned his kingdom. Since that time, Maya Danava has been protected by Lord Shiva, and therefore he falsely thinks that he need not fear the Sudarshan Chakra of the Supreme Personality of Godhead." Also, no purport. So, text 29. "The planetary system below Talatala is known as Mahatala. It is the abode of many hooded snakes, descendants of Kadru, who are always very angry. The great snakes who are prominent are Kuhaka, Takshaka, Kaliya, and Susena." Wonder if that's the same Kaliya that Krishna kicked out of the lake. No, we don't know. "The snakes in Mahatala are always disturbed by fear of Garuda, the carrier of Lord Vishnu. But although they are full of anxiety, some of them nevertheless sport with their wives, children, friends, and relatives." And this is a short purport. "It is stated here that the snakes who live in the planetary system known as Mahatala are very powerful and have many hoods. They live with their wives and children and consider themselves very happy, although they are always full of anxiety because of Garuda, who comes there to destroy them. This is the way of material life. Even if one lives in the most abominable condition, he still thinks himself happy with his wife, children, friends, and relatives." Maam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pastabhutalesha Madhavaktivadanta Swaminit Namane Namaste Sarasvati Devi Govardhavani Pacharne Nevashesha Sunyavadi Pastachari Shatarne Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhunachananda Shri Advaita Gadadar Shavasati Gola Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So these snakes that are being described here sort of bears a lot of resemblance to Kaliya serpent that Krishna chastised in the in the Yamuna River there. I mean, he was angry all the time. He had many hoods. He was there with his wives, children, etc. I wonder, anybody know anything about that? Is it the same Kaliya, or anyway, probably Kaliya is a descendant of this race of snakes, perhaps. Anyway, it sounds very similar. So Prabhupada says here in the purport that even if one lives in the most abominable condition, still he thinks himself happy with his wife, children, friends, and relatives. So that's illusion. You know, the person's living in the most abominable condition, but he's thinking himself happy with his wife, children, friends, and relatives. And the illusion works the other way around too. That one could be thinking, oh, that looks like, you know, the most abominable condition. But it can be something that could bring, be something that could bring true happiness. And I was like, I'll give an example of what I'm talking about. When I was on this, recently I was on Sankirtan for a couple months, and we were in Florida, and we're distributing books in the parking lot. It was the end of the day, actually. We're just getting ready to leave. So we had to break down all the boxes, the empty boxes. So the boxes, the JSD boxes, and, the Journey to Self-Discovery boxes, and the Science of Self-Realization boxes now, they're very strongly fortified. You know, they're not just the old days. You used to be able to just kind of go bloop, and you open the box. But these boxes are, stapled, taped, the whole works, you see. So to get them open, break them down is it's a whole job. So anyway, so an individual was doing that, and so he was carrying a knife because he had to, you have to use a knife or a key or something like that to break the tape, to break it down. So he's walking through the parking lot carrying a knife, and Florida's very kind of, all the states are like that. I mean, anyway, he aroused the interest of the local police force. And before we knew it, we had like about five or six police cars, everybody was there, what's going on here, Because the guy was walking around with a knife, holding it like that, And he had the boxes in the other hand, of course, but, so we had to explain to him, you have to use this knife to open the boxes. And he said, what's that van? And then they checked everything, and they did a whole thing on us, they came over and looked at the van, and, they said, what's going on here, they saw all the boxes, and how many guys are in here, and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, it was a whole big thing. And, finally when they worked out, okay, it's just a bunch of fellows traveling around this van, But I could see one of the policemen, he goes, when we explained to him that, with this five of us traveling in this van, and we all live in here, and we just travel from one place to the other. And he just kind of shook his head and went, wow, life in the van, And then it was like in the mood of like, how unfortunate you guys are. You're just five guys and you got to just travel around that little van. You see? But little did he know that this was, even though it appeared superficially, it appeared like a very uncomfortable situation, it was actually the greatest happiness. It's like it's that verse in the Bhagavatam about Tapo Divyam, divine austerities. You see? And those people can't see that. An illusion? They're thinking that the abominable condition, is being with their friends, with their wife, their children, their friends and relatives, is very happy. Actually, it's very abominable, And they're thinking that they're looking at people performing tapo divyam, divine austerities. They see that as like, oh, poor people. They have to do that. They have to eat so little. They have to chant all those things. They have to. They have to do all these things. Poor people. But actually, that's the bliss. That's the real, way to become happy. So, in illusion, people have everything back to front, front to back, upside down. It's like they're just confused. They don't know what's what. So, so the question is how to help people become free from this illusion. How do you get out of this illusion of, you know, thinking, mistaking material sense pleasure for happiness, and seeing divine austerities as something miserable? Well, devotional service is, of course, the ultimate solution. Engaging in devotional service is the ultimate solution to that problem, you know, becoming, how to become free from that illusion. And one very important aspect of devotional service is having good association. If you have good association, sometimes it can help you become, snap out of an illusion. You know, I'll give in, once again, I'll give an example from my own recent experience that I was thinking that I couldn't do this concert tour. I'd been invited to do it for quite a few years now, at least 3 or 4 years. And each time I declined because I thought, it's going to be too much traveling, too much driving around the van. I won't be able to handle that. It'll be too uncomfortable. I had all these kind of excuses in my mind. You know, that was one of them, and a bunch of others. And I just kind of like, I was convinced that I, you know, couldn't do it. But then I kept getting pressure from Omkar and this other devotee, Parmeshwara. Maybe some of you know. Anyway, so I kind of got embarrassed into it. And so I decided, okay, I got to do it. And I thought I'd give it my best shot. And it was still, I wasn't getting the hang of it for the, you know, although I had the good association, I had like one level of good association was that I had the devotees, you know, encouraging me to do it. And also, I saw their own example. They were doing it, and they were doing okay. They made the adjustment. They were able to do what needed to be done to get the service, you know, perform the service. So that, you know, that was good. That helped me kind of reevaluate my situation. I thought, well, you know, if they can do it, I can do it. I just, you know, tried a bit harder, but still, I wasn't quite getting the hang of it in the sense that my results weren't very good initially. And they told me, don't worry about it. California is the toughest state. You know, it's kind of, if you don't do good here in California, don't worry. But so I didn't do good in California. But I also didn't do good in Phoenix, Arizona, which was also supposed to be a very good show. So I was actually at one point, right after that show, I was thinking of bailing out. I was thinking, I'll just hop on an airplane and come back. Somebody else can take my place. So we're just driving along, you know, and Parmeshwara said to me, I said, you know, you don't really want to give up, do you? I said, no, I don't. I want to keep going. He said, well, just, you know, try another show or two, see what happens. So I thought, okay, you know. And then I did, the next morning, I did something. So I had that good association of the devotees, and also I had there's another level of good association that I was, took, Jai, Shishu, Rukmini, Dwarkanath, Ki Jai. That I took shelter of, which was in a, Jai Gauranga gave me as a present just before I went on the trip. He gave me a little wallet, and inside the wallet it had a little picture of the six Goswamis that was like behind a piece of plastic there to, you know, keep it from getting damaged. So by Krishna's mercy, that next morning I just remembered, oh yeah, I used to pray a lot to the six Goswamis and for their mercy, and I remember that how it used to be very beneficial and helpful. So I thought, and I remember this thing I read in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, which I used to take shelter of previously. So I thought, okay, this is, you know, I should try this again. Because once I had a very good experience when I was, a number of good experiences when I was in Australia and New Zealand. The one particularly stood out in my mind. I was asked to do a marathon. I hadn't been doing Sankirtan for a while because at that time I was a temple vice president, and so I was doing different services. But, you know, when it came for the Prabhupada marathon, everybody had to go out on the marathon. So I was put out there, and, you know, for the first, like, half of the day, I was just struggling, you know, not having a very good experience there. And I went back to the car, and I just sat down in the car, and I thought, what am I going to do? This is a month-long marathon, and, you know, I'm already feeling like discouraged and defeated, and it's just halfway through the first day. So I just was, you know, trying to mentaling out basically, and I looked on the dashboard and there was a book there. I said, I'll just read a bit, maybe that'll help, you know, get in better consciousness. And it worked out, it was the Anchalila Volume 1. So I picked that up and I started reading, and just practically in the first couple pages, I think it was on page 4 or 5, I found this verse. where it goes, even in Sanskrit, is Echai Goshai Kore Charana Bandhan Yahoite Bignana Shavishta Paran. And the translation is, I pray to the lotus feet of the six Goswamis, Sri Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, Sri Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, Gopal Bhatta Goswami, like that, so that all impediments to my writing this literature will be annihilated and my real desire will be fulfilled. That was the verse. And this was Prabhupada's purport. He said, if one wants to benefit the entire world, he will certainly find persons like hogs and pigs who will put forward many impediments. That is natural. But if a devotee seeks shelter at the lotus feet of the six Goswamis, the merciful Goswamis will certainly give the Lord's servitor all protection. It is not astonishing that impediments are placed before those who are spreading the Krishna consciousness movement all over the world. Nevertheless, if we adhere to the lotus feet of the six Goswamis and pray for their mercy, all impediments will be annihilated and the transcendental devotional desire to serve the Supreme Lord will be fulfilled. So on that occasion, back about 25 years ago, when I'd read that and I thought, okay, I got to try this. I have, you know, what do I have nothing else to lose because I'm already feeling, you know, defeated. So I just got out there and I started chanting, Bande Rupa Sanatana Raghu Yago Shri Jiva Gopalago, like that, over and over again. I didn't know the song, you know, the Sri Sad Goswami Astaga, or English or Sanskrit, so I only knew that. So I just started chanting that and praying for the mercy of the six Goswamis. And lo and behold, started doing good. Everybody started taking, and I wound up having, you know, very good results, and I wound up actually tying for first in that marathon at the end of the month. But that was my whole thing. That whole marathon, I was just taking shelter of the six Goswamis, praying for their mercy. So I kind of remembered that. And going back to this recent situation, so I decided on that morning, I'll pray to the six Goswamis. So I was chanting my japa and praying six Goswamis like that. And once again, lo and behold, had a good day. And then after that, I was doing it every day, and every day was good. So the whole results for the whole rest of the concert tour were good. And that was, I think, something that made a big difference. So it was, you know, once again, you have to have good association external, but, you know, in terms of like be with devotees who are doing the thing that you want to be doing, but you think that you can't do. Because, you know, that helps. You'll get encouragement from them. You get instruction from them. And also, this was another level of good association. You have to take shelter of the instructions, you know, that are the philosophy and the instructions that are there in Prabhupada's books. That's also association. You know, Prabhupada said there was Vani and Vapu, right? So the Vapu is important. It's very important. And the Vani is even more important. Because even with the Vapu, even with, the, you know, being in the association of the other fired up Sankirtan devotees, still I was, you know, having a difficult time, not quite getting the hang of it. But when I added to that, taking shelter of the Vani, you know, the combination worked. Between, you know, I had the Vapu, and I had took shelter of the Vani, instruction of this Prabhupada, and then everything just started happening. All the good results started coming, just day after day. It was, a lot of books were going out, you know, very good, Manalakshmi, like that. So that was really nice to experience. And so as I said, the solution to the problem, or certainly an aspect, the solution to the problem of becoming free from illusion is engaging in devotional service, and a very important aspect of that is having good association. And there's those two aspects to good association. There's the Vapu and Vani, and both are important, and we should try to get both of those, you know, Vapu and Vani. And then, if we do like that, then we'll have a good experience. You know, we'll experience how our devotional service becomes enhanced, you know, becomes improved like that. And then the next level is to be good association. See, Prabhupada explained that he created ISKCON to give people who are interested in spiritual life an opportunity to get good association. So in other words, our first duty is to get good association. Because by getting good association, we should become fixed up in devotional service. And then when we are a bit fixed up, or even before we're that fixed up, even just, you know, as soon as we're at least able even to appreciate the importance of good association, as much as possible, we should try to be good association. See, in other words, we should try to give good association to other people. That's the, you know, the second half of the whole thing. And that's very important, you know. That's called preaching, basically. You know, give, be good association. Encourage others and show a good example. Those two things. And that's something that Prabhupada also very much wanted us to do. And that he emphasized like anything. And another thing that really helped me during this trip was whenever we weren't distributing, because there's a lot of driving, you know, in between places, hours, probably an average of 6 to 8 hours a day. And I really, I took shelter of reading this book here. Well, not just this one book, but these books by Hari Sari, Transcendental Diary. And it really is fabulous. If anybody hasn't already read these, I really recommend that you read these. It's like reading Srila Prabhupada, you know, have Bhagavad Gita as it is like Srila Prabhupada as it is. You really feel like you're there. And he's gone to, you know, great lengths and to make sure it's like really trying to have it very, very authentic. You know, he quotes Prabhupada and then he's transcribed little excerpts from lectures Prabhupada gave, and you know, it's very, you really feel like you're there and you're experiencing it all over again or for the first time. So that was very good. That was very helpful. Anyway, so, you know, as I was reading through these, I read 3.5 of these during the trip. And you could see Prabhupada over and over again was emphasizing the importance of preaching. I couldn't count how many times and how many different situations he quoted that verse to people, Yare deke tare kaha Krishna upadesh amara gaya guru hana tare desh. You know, he gave that instruction to devotees. He gave that instruction to members of parliament from India. He gave that instruction to, you know, casual guests in London and France. I mean, practically, you know, everybody, anybody who was a bit interested who was coming along, Prabhupada would tell him, yeah, this is what you need to do. You know, you practice Krishna consciousness, and then according to this, you know, this instruction of Lord Chaitanya, share it with other people. So it's very, you know, something that really Prabhupada emphasized a lot, as practically as much as sadhana, maybe more. You know, and both things are important. It's definitely, you gotta, if you don't have a good sadhana yourself, then what are you going to preach? But it doesn't end there. We shouldn't think our spiritual lives end there. It's definitely absolutely essential, required. But then we have to, even beyond that, we should have a program. You know, we should have to. Each one of us individually has to address this issue of how am I going to share Krishna consciousness with other people. It's you know, absolutely imperative. And here's a couple statements, just so you don't think that. You know, this is just my little trip here. I'll just read a couple brief things that Prabhupada had to say about this so you can have further confirmation on this point. This is an excerpt from a walk Prabhupada was on in Melbourne, Australia in 1974. So Prabhupada says, that is missionary activities that they do not understand, but you have to make them understand. They are not calling you. I am suffering. Please come. But it is your business to go and let them know that you are suffering. You take this method. Prabhupada says, that is the way of becoming very quickly recognized by Krishna. And that's a significant sentence right there, because that's our goal. Our goal is to be recognized by Krishna. And Prabhupada's saying it. Here's the method of becoming very, very quickly recognized by Krishna. So any devotee, any serious devotee, when they hear that, you know, their ears should perk up. Oh, here's Prabhupada. Here's like an inside tip, you know, how to become successful. You know, how to get what I want. Recognition by Krishna. Right? And he goes on to say, if you think they are not understanding, what is the use of going there? Let me sleep. Prabhupada says, that is not good. They are not understanding, still you have to go. Then Krishna will take it. He is laboring hard for my sake. Never mind he is successful, it doesn't matter. But he is working hard for me. That is noted down. So our business is to be recognized by Krishna. Whether one man is converted or not converted, that is not our business. That's an interesting point. So Prabhupada's really stressing, don't be attached. Don't be attached. Whether one man is converted or not, that is not our business. But we shall try our best. And just preach. Don't even worry about if it's coming out successful or not. He says, Krishna must see that I am giving service to him. That's all. That is wanted. Not that you have to judge that you have approached so many men, nobody became Krishna conscious. That doesn't matter. Really, he's really, you know, hammering in this point. Just don't be attached. Just as a matter of duty, we have to go out and preach. Don't worry about the results. He says, but you have gone there. You have endeavored. You have made your sincere effort. That is recognized by Krishna. And that is the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu never said, you have to see he has actually become Krishna conscious. Never said. You simply go and say. That is your business. It is not that you have to see that he's become Krishna conscious. It is not so easy to become Krishna conscious. And then he goes on. So, there's one very nice instruction. And another one, this is a couple of years later, Prabhupada, when he arrived in Vrindavan in 1976. This is September 3rd, 1976. This is his arrival address. And so this is, I'll read just a paragraph from this book by Harisari. It says, surveying the crowd, many of whom had traveled thousands of miles to come and live in Vrindavan. They traveled thousands of miles to come and live in Vrindavan. Okay, he's making that point. He gave clear definition to their purpose for being there. Quote, okay, Prabhupada says, you cannot sit idly to show your gorgeousness in a secluded place, imitating Haridas Thakur, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. No, you have to preach. That is the order of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Amada Agaya Guru Hana Tare De. Same verse again, quoting it over and over. That is really following Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's order. Not to imitate Haridas Thakur. Even you do that very nicely. That is for your safety. Suppose that you are doing nicely. But that is for your safety. But one who is facing dangerous position for others' benefit, they are very quickly recognized by Krishna. Nichatasman manusheshu kaschime priyakritama yaidam paraman guyam madbhakte shabarashati. Just like fighting soldiers, they are facing danger for the country, they are recognized. Similarly, those who are preachers on behalf of Krishna, preaching people to take the Krishna consciousness, they are great soldiers. So that was Prabhupada's statement there. And there's so many others like that. I mean, those are just two I just kind of ran into. This one I carry around with me, and then I just happened to read again. I was familiar with that, but I bumped into it again as I was reading this book. You can find dozens to the same effect. And one other point on this is that here in Los Angeles, I think it was 1973, the devotees wrote Prabhupada a letter. They wrote the Vyasa Puja homage, and they either included a letter or shortly after they wrote Prabhupada a letter. And the letter sort of expressed, it's in that book, but it might take me a few minutes to find it, so I won't bother. I'll just try to tell from my own memory. They wrote a letter expressing their gratitude to Prabhupada for having translated, you know, all the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita and the Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita into English for the Western-speaking people, and for engaging them in the Sankirtan movement. And the letter concluded that, you know, Prabhupada, thank you so much. We're so grateful. And we don't know how we can repay you. You know, we don't know how we can ever repay you. And Prabhupada wrote a letter back. It was to the devotees right here in New Dwarka. And the letter back says, actually, there is no way you can repay the spiritual master. You're debt to the spiritual master. But then Prabhupada said, if you would all want to repay me, then please preach very vigorously like I am preaching. So you have to analyze that sentence, you see? He said, if you at all, what does that mean? Even if you have a little desire to repay me, then this is what you should do. What to speak of if you have a big desire to repay me? Because if you have a big desire to repay me, then yeah, it's a no-brainer. You got to dedicate your whole life to do like what I'm doing, trying to spread the Krishna conscious movement. But even if you, he said, if you at all, even if you have a little desire to, you want to repay Prabhupada, that's what his recommendation was. You should preach very vigorously, like I am preaching. So, some thoughts on that. So I'll stop there. Does anybody have any questions? Mukundadat Prabhu.
Thank you for the very nice class. Regarding the point that sometimes results come, sometimes results don't come, sometimes we see that also Srila Prabhupada would change his activities. He would change his program in response to, say, there being no favorable reaction from, you know, those that he was targeting. I was just wondering if you can comment on that a little further.
Yeah, sure. The detail might change, but the principle remains the same. you know, detail is, you know, you might be like, for instance, distributing books in a certain way or at a certain place, and then that might not become so productive at some point. So the detail might change. You might stop trying to distribute books in that way or in that place to that community of people or whatever. But the principle of preaching is still there. You'll just try it in a different way. So sometimes, yeah, we have to make an adjustment. But that's not a deviation from the instruction, because we're upholding the principle. The principle is that we are dedicated to trying to share Krishna consciousness with other people. And we've been given certain guidelines, book distribution, prasadam distribution, harinam. But sometimes we might have to change some details, you know, adjust things in a certain way due to political situation or, you know, maybe the weather or whatever. You know, there might be some reason we have to adjust things. That's okay, as long as we don't deviate from the principle, which is to spread Krishna consciousness according to those guidelines that were given to us by Srila Prabhupada. Does that sort of answer the question, you think? Yeah. Omkar.
Thank you for the nice class, Rahul. In regard to your class, you were mentioning about how you were having a difficult time at first getting convinced to try this yajna, this very wonderful yajna. And so on that point, sometimes, you know, being back here at the temple, you know, life gets very comfortable. And then the thought of having to go out there and face unknown people and talk to them about these books and ask for donation, it can seem very intimidating. So how would you recommend for those of us who may feel that sort of intimidation, how would you recommend that we can get over that to help assist in this preaching movement of Srila Prabhupada's?
Well, you just, once again, you take shelter of the philosophy and just meditate on different things that Prabhupada said. I happen to have one really good thing right here, up my sleeve here. This is this is a letter that Prabhupada wrote to Brahmananda in response to something he said. I don't know what Brahmananda said in his letter, but this was Prabhupada's response. He said, regarding Krishna's being very kind upon us, should be on the principle that Arjuna followed. The principle is that Krishna was Arjuna's most intimate friend. He could have brought victory to Arjuna without any endeavor by Arjuna. Neither was that principle advised by Krishna, neither Arjuna followed it. As a military man, Arjuna fought to his best, but the victory was brought to him by Krishna. Similarly, and here's the instruction, here's the meditation, here's what every devotee should, you know, be conscious of 24/7. It says, similarly, we should try our best to our best capacity, and victory will come from Krishna. Because we have to be confident of that, that it's just, we could, you know, if it's, we're experiencing difficulty, if we're doing everything we're supposed to be doing, we're doing what we've been instructed to do by our higher authorities, and we're doing it, trying to do it as best to our best capacity in full Krishna consciousness, but still it's not quite working out the way we'd like it to see it work out. Just don't get discouraged. Stay optimistic and determined and, you know, enthusiastic, and keep trying, and just take it as a test from Krishna. Persevere. And then it goes on to say, we should never sit idly and ask Krishna to do everything. That is the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. It is clearly said in the Gita, yudyasya cha mam anushma. And then Prabhupada, again, he goes and gives the general instructions. Ordinarily, we have to try our best to our best capacity to achieve something. Right? And by Krishna's grace, all of a sudden, we shall see everything is there. This sort of help from Krishna is transcendental happiness. But that all of a sudden might not happen all of a sudden. In other words, you might have to really try for a while. You might have to go through some period of struggle, you know, surrender and difficulty before you can get to that point of all of a sudden we shall see everything is there, and, you know, and experience that sort of help from Krishna's transcendental happiness. But it's, you know, so but we should remember that Krishna will help. We just have to persevere. We just have to, as Rupa Goswami says, utsaha nischaya tarya tata dharma bhartana. We have to be enthusiastic, patient, and determined, and confident that if we just continue on like that, Krishna will reciprocate, and he does. And that's the best way to deal with that. Just to, you know, be aware, know the philosophy, and just preach to yourself to keep going, and that you make sure you're doing everything that you're supposed to be doing, that you're really doing what your authorities want you to do it, and you're doing it and trying to do it in Krishna consciousness, and then just go for it. Just be determined and keep executing, and it'll Krishna will help you. Yeah, Archita Babu.
There's also the aspect of management, though. It's just like in business, not everybody's a self-starter. Not every employee comes in and just dives into the work and gets right in there and does what needs to be done. That's why you have top management, middle management, supervisors like that. Mm. So we need that also in a spiritual movement. You need to have a plan of action, and then you have to have different levels of management to achieve that plan. In other words, not everybody's going to be fired up to go to the airport or downtown. So then the managers have to scratch their heads. Okay, where can we do book tables and smart tables and this and that? And you know, somebody's like some of our own members here in our community that don't live here, but you know, they're members of this temple. Their level of book distribution is going around and filling in different tables in different stores, just keeping them supplied with books, and that's book distribution. Because any one of those books can turn somebody into a pure devotee. We know that. So my point is, the managers also have to scratch their heads. You're throwing it out to the general body of the devotee, which is good. But the managers also have to scratch their heads at how to engage everybody according to their propensity, not how to train everybody to be a Brihaspati. Not everybody's going to be a Brihaspati.
Yeah, I hope I didn't give that impression.
You have to come up with ways where other devotees who are not so either committed or so talented in this particular endeavor can feel connected. In other words, we need to have more book tables in different places, different parts of the cities. We need to have other venues and ways of getting the books out there rather than just the riding in a van with five other guys approach, or the going out to the airport every day approach that Satchitananda Prabhu does. Not everybody's going to plug into either one of those scenarios, so the managers have to come up with more and more ways where somebody who is maybe naturally attracted to doing gardening can once in a week sit at a book table in a garden show somewhere or something like that. You know, in other words, you have to be creative.
Yeah, where there's a will, there's a way. I mean, everybody has to scratch the head. I'll give you an example of one really good head scratcher that I just heard about when I was up in Portland. I was talking with some devotees there. Radhanath Maharaj happened to be there, so we went to the temple there. And one devotee was telling me he was a motel owner. And this other devotee was introducing me to this devotee who owned a Best Western motel up there. And he was saying, yeah, this devotee, he sponsored 1,100 Bhagavad Gitas, you know, for his motel rooms, the motel rooms of the motel that he owns, and some other ones up in that Portland area. So then that devotee who did that, he said, oh, but that's nothing. He said, there's another devotee in Chicago, I think he said. One person sponsored 11,000 Bhagavad Gitas, and another one sponsored 30,000 Bhagavad Gitas. So I haven't had a chance to verify those figures. I don't know if it's correct. And he mentioned that was Vaisheshika was behind all that. So I was just thinking, wow, you know, there I was earlier in that day, I was thinking, wow, I've just distributed so many books and collected so much. But, you know, compared to that, that's not it. So, yeah, you have to scratch your head. I mean, that wasn't something anybody was doing a few years ago, but he came up with that. Somebody came up with that idea, and look at that. So it's not like there's no not stereotyped. It's not like, as Archita pointed out, everybody has to go out on the street and stop total strangers, and that's one way to do it. And it's probably you could do it if you put your mind to it. Getting back to that first point I made in the class that, you know, a lot of times what we think we can do or can't do, it's all illusion. You know, you can do a lot more than what you sometimes think you can do. And so you might be surprised. But also there's other ways. There's so many different ways. And that's a perfect example of that. You know, I never thought of that, but somebody thought of that idea. And now thousands of Bhagavad Gitas are going out to motel owners, and they're putting them right next to the Gideon Bible in the drawer of the motel room or the hotel room. Incredible. Brilliant. Yeah.
One more point on the scratching head concerning Vaisheshika Prabhu. On the Bhaktivinoda Thakur Sankirtan festival that they had up in San Jose, they distributed 10,000 books and collected 18,000 Lakshmi in 2 days. And they do this every single month. This isn't just like a one-shot deal and just, you know, it's just a fluke. Every single time they go out, it builds, it grows. They distribute more books, they collect more Lakshmi, more devotees went out. On this particular one, I think 564 devotees went out. 564, they're all householders. Mm. Not a single one of them lives in the temple. They all have jobs, they all have kids, they all have a life. But yet they sacrifice that time to make that endeavor to try to contribute. Vaisheshguru said that his philosophy is everyone do a little bit. And if everyone does a little bit, then you get amazing results.
Yeah, that's great. Did you say they all had a wife? Oh, good. Okay. I was going to say that might be a little different. Yeah, it's all there. Prema Sankirtan, Prabhu?
Yeah, there is so many different ways to spread this moment. You know, I was reading books from Gurudas Prabhu. You know, Guru Das and Shyama Sundara in the beginning of the movement in London, they met George Harrison, and he did so much. You know, he did so many, you know, records and his music, and actually he's one person who made me devotee. When I was maybe very young, actually I hear Maha Mantra on the radio, and I was immediately attracted, and later on, I don't speak about myself, but now I'm Prema Sankirtan, you know. No, just kidding. So this is a way, you know, there's so many ways. So many people here who are in a room, you know, maybe they have some connection with somebody and they can meet very famous people, you know, movie stars, yeah, whatever. And actually, in this book, actually, Prabhupada encouraged all kind of preaching, actually just this one, to meet very famous, influential people, musicians, movie stars, you know, politicians even. Like in India, they are doing also, you know, they go to big businessmen and they ask for donation, you know, and that way they distribute so many Bhagavad Gitas. So many ways.
Yeah, on that point, as I mentioned, I was up in Portland and Radhanath Maharaj was up there. So the last night we were up there before we came back, he had a program in some yoga center. And Shyama Sundar, that devotee you mentioned who met the Beatles, he happened to be there. So Shyama Sundar introduced Radhanath Maharaj, and then when Radhanath Maharaj sat down, he said something about Shyama Sundar, and he pointed out that that, you know, he was the one who met the Beatles, and he from the way he described it, you could understand that Shyama Sundar didn't have any particular qualification. It wasn't like he, you know, knew the Beatles. I mean, he just was an ordinary American youth, but he had a burning desire to try to do something. You know, he had no money. They went there. They were living, he was living in cardboard boxes in warehouses with his wife and his little baby daughter, Saraswati. And but he just had that burning desire that he wanted to meet the Beatles, and he felt that this was an important message and it should be shared with the Beatles. He told that to Prabhupada before he went. He got permission to go, and Prabhupada said, you know, good idea, go ahead and try it. And he went. He had nothing. He went there. He had no money. He just was living in a cardboard box in a warehouse with his wife and daughter. And somehow or another, and Radhanath Maharaj made the point that the Beatles at that point were so popular, and I know this was a fact because I was, you know, grew up at that era too. They were so popular, they stopped having public performances. And they stopped having concerts because they were just so popular that when they would show up at a concert, they couldn't control the crowds. They were getting mobbed so badly by fans that they actually stopped even having concerts. They just used to produce videos and send them out to the television stations and like that. You know, they continue producing their albums, but they stopped public appearances. They were that popular. So imagine, you know, here there was people that were so popular that they didn't even want to come out in public. Somehow or another, Shyama Sundar, a nobody, you know, by material standards, no money, no influence, nothing, living in a cardboard box in a warehouse with his wife and daughter, was able to meet George Harrison and befriend him and like that. So point being that, you know, preaching can happen on so many different levels. I mean, he didn't distribute a book, but as a result of him doing that, how many books have been distributed? You know, thousands, millions perhaps, you know, because he made George Harrison a devotee, basically, and then George Harrison, in turn, through his music, influenced so many countless numbers of people to become favorable towards Krishna. So, you know, preaching, and any kind of preaching is good. I'll give you another example. Just also happened just these last few days. I mentioned Radhanath Maharaj was there in Portland. So we tried to take the advantage of that to introduce him to the creator, owner, and director of this Warped Tour, which is the most popular concert tour for young people in the history of the United States. All the other concert tours have kind of fell by the wayside, but this one has not only continued on, but it's thriving. So we introduced him. We brought him. He came the last evening of the evening after the last show. Radhanath Maharaj came out and met this man, Kevin Lineman is his name, and had a very nice meeting with him. He sat down. They sat down at a table there. The man brought his two daughters over and his wife over, and they talked for 10, 15 minutes. You know, they made friends with each other. Maharaj made friends with his daughters and everything. And so that's, you know, that's again, that's going to be important preaching, because it's only by this man for some reason or another likes us. He likes the Hare Krishnas. That's the only reason why we're there. And Krishna knows why. I don't. But because he mentioned that he has to, every day, on a regular daily basis, he has to explain to people why we're there. And he gets employees and, I don't know, all sorts of different people coming to him and saying, what are the Hare Krishnas doing here? And he defends our right to be there, you know. So then Maharaj went and preached to him. And, you know, once again, this is going to, it's not, no book was distributed. Well, actually, one book was distributed because we gave him a copy of Maharaj's book, Journey Home. So one book was distributed to Kevin Lyman, no donation. But, you know, who knows what the long-range result of that is going to be. It was a different type of preaching. So all kind of preaching is good, and we don't know what the outcome is going to be. It's you don't know who you're standing next to in an elevator. You don't know who you're meeting when you go to the airport and you just happen to be riding next to, talking to the person sitting next to you in your bus. You know who they are. Especially these days, people dress down when they travel. They dress casually. You might be talking to some super important person, you know, that and make a favorable impression on them, and that, you know, that can change their attitude towards the whole movement. They can turn around in the future and do something really fabulous for us. So there's so many stories like that. I don't want to go on, but on other occasions we've told those stories. I'll just tell one really super quick. And I was living in North Carolina in Prabhupada Village, and the Prabhupada archives moved out there because it was getting too expensive for them here in Los Angeles and San Diego. So when they got out there, they wanted to start up the archives. They had no money. You know, they needed a building to work from. They had no money. They went to the bank and they said, well, look, we got to try something. So they went to the bank and they applied for a loan. They had no collateral, no nothing, you know. They just went in there and talked to the bank manager and said, this is what we'd like to do, and can we get a loan of like $50,000 to do it? So then they just figured he's going to say no, but anyway, it was worth a try. So they did the whole presentation. At the end of the thing, the bank manager said, sure, yeah, no problem, you know, I'll give you a loan. And he took out the, and he said, let's get the paperwork out here. And they did all the paperwork. Everything was signed and sealed and the whole works. And they were just kind of like sitting there looking at each other like, is this for real? I mean, is this really happening? You know, they didn't think that it was, had a hope. And then after the whole thing was over, they were about to leave and they just couldn't help themselves. They said to him, said, look, you know, we don't want to look a gift horse in the mouth, but we're just kind of curious. Why did you give us this loan? Because, you know, we're nobody. We have nothing backing us. No, you know. He said, and then he went, well, when I was a starving student, at the University of Florida in Gainesville, you guys fed me every day. You know, I didn't have any money. I had no way of practically of even surviving. And I just used to go and get the, because, you know, for 30-something years, they've been distributing prasadam on the campus there at University of Florida, Gainesville. And he was one of the starving students that was able to go there and feed himself, stay alive, you know, by the prasadam of the devotees. And as out of gratitude for that, he remembered that. And out of gratitude for that, he knew he was dealing with the devotees there. So he just gave him that loan. So there's a bunch of stories like that. And as I said, we're already late, so I don't want to take... But there's a lot of stories like that. So the point is, it's just... one somehow or another, you know, we have to try to share this with other people, and the fruit will be there. You know, we just have to depend on Krishna. That no preaching goes in vain. It'll bear some good fruit at some point in time in some way. Okay, thank you very much. Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Speaking of something, that's like so inspirational.
Oh, thank you
so much.